This is The State of Things. I'm David Crabtree. An editorial in yesterday's Fayetteville Observer accused North Carolina lawmakers of foot-dragging because the budget that was due on July 1st is nowhere in sight. We're going to cut them some slack, though, because the heat has slowed most of us way, way down. However, we do need a budget. The good folks in Raleigh haven't been doing nothing, however. In the last week alone, they've been quite busy. North Carolina Public Radio WUNC's Capitol reporter Laura Leslie joins us now, as she often does on Thursdays, to talk about what's been going on in the State House and Senate. Laura, good afternoon.
Hi, David.
Let's start with the budget. The legislature passed another stopgap budget last week to keep the state up and running. Have they come any closer to hammering out something more permanent?
Well, we keep hearing enticing rumors that deals are close, but unfortunately, they seem to fall apart within 2 or 3 hours of the rumor coming out. There's a lot of horse trading going on regarding three big issues that the House and the Senate have in mind. One is a tobacco tax. One is whether to cut the top taxes on the corporate or the top income bracket or the sales tax. And the minimum wage hike is a priority for the House. So the deals that we're hearing about kind of revolve around, you know, who's getting what of their priorities. And so, there is some hope that we may have a budget next week, and parts of it have been pretty much nailed down. Education is pretty much nailed down. Looks like justice and public safety and environment and natural resources. But what they're really arguing over right now is the health and human services budget, which is where there's a lot of problems still remaining.
Yeah, let's go back to the tobacco tax just a moment. Is that a key linchpin in this holdup?
Yes, absolutely. The House has approved a 25-cent per pack increase. The Senate wants 35 cents per pack. The difference is about $40 million. The House would bring in 160, and the Senate's version would bring in about $200 million. But the key here is what the tax is in the states around us. Virginia's tax per pack statewide is 30 cents. And so a lot of legislators in the House, especially in tobacco districts, don't want to see us go higher than Virginia because they're afraid that we'll lose a lot of our sales of cigarettes to the border, you know, across the border to the north.
And we're still at a nickel a pack here, right?
We are still at a nickel a pack, the lowest in the nation. South Carolina is at 7 cents, and they have not taken any action this year. Their session's over, and they haven't raised their cigarette tax either. So there's a lot of concern that North Carolina might lose its fame as the place to buy cheap cigarettes in America. And people are worried, justly so, I think, about the economic impact that would have on the travel corridor along I-95 and on some of the border counties as well.
Laura, a lot of conversation this week regarding the attempt to change the lobbying regulations in this state. In fact, Senator Webb Gulley, former Senator Gulley out of Durham, was cited by a couple of folks this week with different conversations about who can lobby when, how long should a member of the legislature be a private citizen, 100% before they begin lobbying. Is something significant going to come from both chambers on this?
Well, as everybody says in the legislature building, change is incremental here. But it looks like we could have a couple of provisions that could change how business is done here. The biggest, I think, is that the bill, in both versions of the bill, actually, would get rid of what's called a goodwill exception. It's this loophole that says that a lobbyist can spend whatever they want and not report it as long as they don't discuss a particular piece of legislation. That's become a laughingstock nationwide. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just ridiculously wide open. So they are going to close that loophole. They're also likely to require more frequent reporting, at least quarterly, most likely monthly, during session. And that's stricter than a lot of states. So lobbyists would have to tell on a monthly basis who they're spending money on and why. And the last piece is, as you referred to, Representative Gulley, the cooling off period, which would say that once you come out of the legislature or the executive branch, you'd have to wait a year before you could go to work lobbying your former peers or working for a group that maybe you used to have some oversight over.
You know, we haven't had a statewide election since early November of last year. We saw some problems with voting machines, particularly down in Carteret County. And now there's this legislation about changes in the way we vote, how we vote, machines, yet there's no money to fund it.
Well, it's not entirely true. The state has $53 million of federal money from the Help Americans Vote Act, and that money is to be used, apportioned out to counties, to help them meet the standards of HAVA. So we have $53 million floating around, but to replace all the machines that the state wants to get rid of would probably cost more than $53 million. And there was an extra $20 million in that voting reform bill that passed in the Senate yesterday, but unfortunately they took out the $20 million. So there's a lot of people on the county levels at Board of Elections that are worried that the state is going to pass this law that says they need to get better machines, machines that produce a paper trail and are countable ballot, but the state's not going to help them pay for it.
Laura, you were talking about Health and Human Services a couple of minutes ago. Let's talk a bit about Medicare and Medicaid. State Senate's been debating some proposed funding cuts to two programs. It's quite complex and a bit confusing, isn't it?
It all is, but, you know, and unfortunately, sometimes things get boiled down to sound bites around here. But it is, I mean, it's important to remember that Health and Human Services is an immense part of the budget. And our Medicaid spending in particular is growing by 12% a year, which is far, far more than the average personal growth or than the state's budget is growing. And so there is a valid concern, I think, about trying to find ways to rein in those costs, but trying to do that without damaging the most vulnerable people. So there was one cut that was being discussed that would have moved about 65,000 aged, blind, and disabled people off of Medicaid and onto Medicare, and about 8,000 would have lost all their coverage. That one has been shelved after massive public outcry. Even the governor said he's not going to sign that. But they are looking at possibly cutting some of the reimbursement rates to doctors and to pharmacies, and they're also looking at some other measures like getting rid of Medicaid funding for erectile dysfunction drugs. That's a bill that's on the Senate floor even as we speak.
You know, the summer cold season has not yet passed us. It's going to be with us another 6 weeks or so. And during that time period, might it be tougher if I need to walk into my neighborhood drugstore and buy a box of Sudafed?
Well, it could be, although it's hard to tell at this point how long it's going to take to pass this. But there is a bill on that's already passed. Two different versions have passed the House and the Senate. But both of them would restrict the sales of drugs that contain pseudoephedrine, which is a chemical that you need to make methamphetamine. You're thinking of medications like a Sudafed, for example, is pseudoephedrine. What the supporters of this bill say is that that is something that's very important to meth makers, and the state has a growing meth problem. So what they want to do is to restrict your ability to buy large amounts of that. Now, the House version wants to restrict all products, the gel caps, the liquids, the children's Sudafed, and put them behind the counter in a store so that you would have to show an ID and sign for it. The Senate version wants to restrict just the pill part, but it wants to make you go to the pharmacist to have it dispensed. And if you've ever waited in line at a pharmacy around here, I think you know that that could be very inconvenient for you. But people say it's worth the inconvenience in order to rein in the growing problem with meth labs, especially in the western part of the state.
Legislature hasn't exactly forced children to eat their vegetables, but they are limiting what elementary and middle school students can buy from vending machines at school, particularly sodas, right?
Yeah, well, you already can't buy a soda in an elementary school, a sugary soda, but they're extending the ban at this point to middle schools as well. And in high schools, you won't be able to buy them at mealtimes. And they're also, this bill, which is actually on the governor's desk, it's already through the legislature, it says that in a vending machine in a school, you can't have more than 50% of sugary sodas. The rest have to be diet or juice or water. And bottled water needs to be available, and like some percentage of the snacks need to be below 200 calories. So, I mean, it is a step in the right direction toward fighting childhood obesity, and the governor is very likely to sign that.
Those lawmakers haven't changed what's in their vending machines, have they?
No, we have some pretty bad vending machines downstairs.
Let's talk a little bit about all-terrain vehicles. This has been an emotional issue with several members of the legislature. The ATVs, 28 states have minimum age requirements. This state has not. There is a House bill that might change that.
Yes, and it's fought its way through. It's through the Senate already. It's in the House right now. It's come down a lot. It's become much less restrictive. But basically, it would keep any child off, you know, less than 8 years old from riding on an ATV. Period. Under 12, you could ride an age-appropriate bike, and up to 16, but you'd need to be supervised by an adult wearing a helmet and eye protection, and et cetera. There's been a lot of a debate about this because opponents say, you know, the government's job is not to play the parent, and the parents should be the ones making these decisions for their children. But, you know, we've had a growing rate of deaths involving ATV accidents here in North Carolina. I think it was 157 last year, and that number continues to grow. And so, you know, I think like 28 states have some minimal age and safety requirements, and there's a strong push, I think, here to do the same.
It's been a busy week on Jones Street. What do you see in the next couple of weeks?
Well, there's a rumor that we'll have a budget next week. we could have a budget next week, but we're going to have something because that stopgap measure runs out on August 5th. So they're going to have to come up with either a budget or another continuing resolution in order to keep the state running while they make up their minds about the details. But I think I'm feeling a shift down here that people really are getting tired and they really want to go home. And so we may start seeing things move a lot more quickly if they can resolve their differences on the tobacco tax. That's the main issue right now, that and employee wages. So we'll see what happens.
Laura, very quickly, speaking of employee wages, state workers were quite vocal in the not too recent past. They've been quiet, a little quieter the past couple of weeks. Any significant hope for state employees or hope for significant raises for state employees?
I guess that depends on how you define significant, but right. The Senate version is 2.5%, I think, and the House wants to give a flat raise, which would be better for people below the median wage in the state. So which side of this all depends on which side of the pay scale you're on, I think. But I think there will be a raise coming. The question is just how much and whom it will benefit the most.
Laura, thank you.
All right. Thanks very much.
Laura Leslie is North Carolina Public Radio WUNC's Capitol reporter. She joined us from Raleigh. This is the state of things. Just ahead, summer's bumper crops, blueberries and tomatoes. Our foodie, Kelly Alexander, joins us in the studio, and we're taking your calls and recipes at 1-877-962-9862. Support for the state of things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.